Please the court, Chief Justice, Justice Holland, Justice Jacobs, Paul Wallace on behalf of the appellant, the state of Delaware, in this case. This case basically comes down to a proper focus in determining whether or not the Superior Court formulated and correctly applied legal precepts. And obviously, the state's suggestion in this de novo review is the Superior Court did not. And the problem was, and I use the term focus in opening, because the Superior Court focused on a very odd part of this entire interaction. And that is whether or not the police officer happened to give the command for Ms. Keith and the other people in the car that had been going up to her parents' home from within the threshold of the door or outside the threshold of the door. And that's it. Because the Superior Court said, because unequivocal and specific consent was not given to the arresting officer to enter the defendant's home, and because exigent circumstances did not exist, suppression was granted. Now, the state suggests respectfully that the proper focus is determining whether or not the seizure of Deborah Keith, and there's no doubt that there would have been a Fourth Amendment seizure when the police officer, whether he gave that command from just inside the threshold or just outside the threshold, to come out so that he could further investigate what had occurred in that long trek to the Keith home, was in fact reasonable under federal and state beliefs of regarding search and seizure. And that notion of reasonableness, the state respectfully suggests, was totally lost on the Superior Court. There was.
Well, let me see if I understand the facts. So while we're talking about focus,
yes,
the officer that was on the highway was an off-duty Clayton police officer in his personal car. Is that correct?
Yes.
And he was outside of his jurisdiction?
He was, Your Honor.
So under the applicable statutes, he could not have effectuated an arrest?
He could not have effectuated an arrest.
But he did walk up to her when she was at the median and say, "I'm a police officer, stay right here." But he was in plain clothes in his personal car, and she left anyway.
Yes.
So the off-duty Clayton police officer follows her to her father's house.
Yes.
And calls the state police and says, "I think I'm following somebody who's driving under the influence. Can you send someone?"
Yes.
So then we have the state policeman who hasn't seen anything.
No.
Arrive at the father's house and goes to the house, and it's what, 2:30 in the morning?
About 2 a.m., I believe, as I recall.
So the real question is, what's the basis for the state trooper approaching the father's house at 2:30 in the morning and telling everybody to come outside?
Well, I suggest, Your Honor, first of all, that we have to go back to the initial interaction between even an off-duty police officer. While he may not have been able to effectuate arrest, the state does not concede that he could not effectuate an investigative detention under 1902, even outside of his jurisdiction. If you look at 1902, 1901, and 1904, they say nothing about jurisdiction necessarily. But even still, let's just assume that he's a witness who's giving evidence, much like the Bloomingdale case, kind of the witness who's following the drunk driver and says, "Look, I'm seeing all these things." And he explains. In fact, he says, "I'm on the phone to 911. I am, in fact, I follow her for 5 to 6 miles. She's all over the road. Her passengers are throwing beer cans out. I personally see that." And then he meets up with a uniformed officer, a state police officer, who obviously that I believe nobody questions his jurisdiction at that point. Once this information is turned over, the state suggests, to Corporal Brower. And Corporal Brower first sees, and I know that there's some dispute as to whether or not it's Deborah Keith and the passengers, but obviously the Superior Court found that to be the reasonable inference, and I suggest that is the reasonable inference. Outside of the garage, still milling about, Brower comes in, and as soon as he turns on his lights to further investigate, and the state respectfully suggests, and we said in our briefing, that we believe he did, in fact, have probable cause at that point, based on the information that he was given from Rao, based on what he had seen at this point, and that, therefore, what happened was the initial attempt.
How does he have probable cause to arrest her for driving under the influence based on all of this conduct that he never saw?
Well, Your Honor, I'd suggest that the court determined that in the case of Keene Thomas, that in fact he can have probable cause based on information that's passed to him from another police officer, even if that police officer is off duty, even if it was a private citizen. What this court said in Bloomingdale was that, in fact, somebody could pull, that police officer could pull over based on a private citizen's passing on of information when they've been behind the drunk driver who's all over the road and everything else. So I would suggest that the information that's being passed to him at that time, then him getting there, then him watching as they flee into the house, I'd suggest that if we look at everything that had been passed on to him from Officer Rao and from 911, that in fact he did have probable cause at that point. If not probable cause for DUI specifically, probable cause for reckless, we could think of numerous crimes that she probably committed, disorderly conduct, reckless endangering, other crimes.
All right, suppose he did have probable cause. What then? What follows?
Well, then I suggest that when he sees her outside of the home, and then she flees into the home, that he, at very least, it is reasonable to say under Peyton, under Thomas, under Harris, that in fact he can say, you need to come out.
Okay.
That he can,
characterization of flees into the home is interesting. Is there something un-American about looking at someone going into their house, their own home? Do we no longer consider our home our castle, protected from police interference without going to an independent, neutral, detached magistrate to examine the facts and determine whether a warrant should exist? Is there a serious consideration here for the fact that we start with the presumption that if you can get a warrant, you ought to, and only under circumstances where a warrant's impractical or impossible do you not seek to appear before a magistrate and obtain a warrant?
No, Your Honor. We always start with the understanding that if you can get a warrant and if it's proper under those circumstances, and that's why we have the exigent circumstances.
This isn't somebody running from a violent crime into the woods trying to escape. This is somebody that goes into her own domicile, right?
Well, after, in fact, she's engaged in the behavior that she has engaged, after she has, one, at least taken off from one police officer who showed her badge and said, you need to stay here because of the dangerous behavior she'd already engaged in, and the continued dangerous behavior. The problem is, who knows what she's going to do next? The unpredictability is such that she could turn right back around and take off in the car. Well,
unless I misunderstand the facts, you'd have to run over a state police officer and run into his car to get away, wouldn't she?
In which case, I would say he had seized her without anything else. The problem is that what trying to get a warrant in these circumstances, one, because he's investigating a DUI, and at very least there's reason to believe that in fact she may be intoxicated based on her driving, based on the fact that they're throwing beer cans. And I use the term flee in these circumstances. No, there's nothing un-American about going into your home. But when in fact they've been out in the, it's clear that she wants to get to the house. She wants to seek, what she wants to say is, this is home base, and you can't touch me here, no matter what I've done outside and no matter what you've seen, police officers.
Well,
That's basically what the law doesn't permit.
I just want to make sure I understand your theory. The foundation of it is that the state police officer had probable cause based on the information he was given by the off-duty policeman. Is it your position that because he had probable cause, the state policeman could then forcibly enter the home and drag her out?
Well, that gets into the reasonableness question. How much can he do?
The record reflects in the Superior Court opinion that the state policeman, you know, there's a debate about crossing the threshold and answering the door by the father and things like that. But the state police officer's testimony was he ordered everyone out of the house, and that was not optional.
Yes.
So the question is, what was his authority for doing that?
I would suggest that his authority for doing that was based either on the probable cause, or even if the court does not believe that he had enough probable cause, he certainly had reasonable articulable suspicion for a detention. And a detention, when he obtains that, and I would suggest the court can look at the Second Circuit's case of Smith and the District of Delaware's discussion of that in Gorey, what's truly wrong in this case is that there is this belief that if, in fact, probable cause or reasonable articulable suspicion to detain is obtained outside, that all of a sudden the defendant can, by passing the threshold of their house, thwart the ability to continue reasonable steps
now,
to take them into custody.
Now, the question of the Chief Justice is, assuming he has probable cause, why doesn't he have to get a warrant?
In this case, there were exigencies that would call against a warrant, and that is the dissipation of blood alcohol, the potential for fouling her blood alcohol by further drinking, and the like. And this court, the United States Supreme Court, have strongly spoken about the importance of being able to take those tests in a timely manner and the dangerousness of drunk driving, and therefore the state suggests
that is
an exigency in and of itself.
Doesn't the statute say the test can be administered within 4 hours?
Yes, Your Honor.
And haven't you presented testimony or people under your supervision time and time again where an expert witness comes in and based on when a person had their last drink and when they had their last drink before they drove, they can extrapolate to what their blood alcohol content would have been?
Certainly we have attempted that.
Does it take 4 hours to get a warrant?
There's nothing in the record as to how long it would have taken to get a warrant, Your Honor, but it is 2 a.m. in the morning.
But there's still an understanding, isn't there, that unless there's some exigent circumstance in after a hot pursuit that you may not be able to solve the crime, that our Constitution, both state and federal, strongly urges police to go to an independent, neutral, detached magistrate and not make their own independent judgment simply because they're wearing a badge and a gun and a uniform, that they are both judge, jury, and executioner. That you go to the magistrate, and the magistrate tests whether or not you have sufficient probable cause. If she believes you do, then she issues an arrest warrant.
And in this case, Your Honor, but that, the exigent circumstance doctrine is specifically for circumstances like this, not simply fresh pursuit, not simply the four other areas that the court talked about, flushing drugs and things like that.
Yeah, but the trial judge did not rule on the exigent circumstances argument that the state made. Is that correct?
He did not in the end. We did make that argument, and
court
in
held
fact,
that
he
didn't have to reach it because consent was required. That is, the homeowner's consent was required, and it wasn't obtained.
Well, and that's...
Is that a fair statement of...
Of the ruling, yes.
Okay.
Certainly.
One last question about the ruling. As Justice Holland correctly pointed out, it was the policeman's testimony that when the door was opened, he ordered everybody out of the house. The defendant's testimony was that the policeman actually entered the house and dragged her out. Was there a finding by the trial judge one way or the other?
No. There was no finding one way or the other. The only finding that the Superior Court made was that he actually passed the threshold because there was question as to whether or not he gave that command from outside the threshold or whether he went in, and he honestly said, I generally do go in. You know, when I'm talking to somebody in that circumstance, I certainly may have been over the threshold. The Superior Court made that finding and that finding alone. In fact, many places throughout the opinion, the judge simply says, here's what one side says, here's what another side says, and doesn't resolve any of it. But worked only on that one.
Suppose, hypothetically, the judge had concluded, that is, had accepted the testimony of the defendant and found as fact that the state policeman actually went into the house and dragged her out. Would that matter from your standpoint?
No, it would not. Because the state suggested under these circumstances, this falls under Harris and Thomas, those rare circumstances where, in fact, because of the stream of the activity in this case and where and how things had played out, by that point he had probable cause and that, in fact, he could make that minimal intrusion. But if he had rolled up there and nobody had been outside of the house and he did not watch them go right in, if he didn't have all of Rowell's information, we'd be in a much different circumstance here.
Why?
Well, because then I would suggest that you don't have that fleeing activity directly into the house. You don't have all of the information that, in fact, there may be an exigency. That is, you're going to lose the evidence of blood alcohol, and you will not be able to properly prosecute this case. That's where the balance lies.
But at 2:30 in the morning, if someone pulls into their driveway, wouldn't you expect them to get out of the car and go into the house?
I think from both Officer Rowell's testimony and Corporal Brower's testimony, Officer Rowell actually testified that they were out lingering outside, that they were actually talking outside and things like that for some period of time. And I think they said there's a few minutes before Brower gets there. It's when Brower gets there, pulls into the driveway, turns on his lights, that all of a sudden they beat feet into the house. I believe that's the fairest reading of exactly that exchange. And that is one factual finding that I suggest the Superior Court did appear to make on page 2 of its opinion, that it was that caused them to go into the home itself.
Do you see no distinction between Ms. Keith going into her home where she lives with her parents and an individual who might be followed under the same circumstances or a state police officer called to the scene when someone goes from one bar to another? Is there no distinction in your mind about the police activity at the door of someone's home between 2 and 2:30 in the morning and other circumstances?
Yes, I believe that gets me back to, I guess, my key word for this argument, that is reasonableness. And that is, you have to look at all of the activity and what exactly he has done and determine whether or not it comports with our ideas of whether that's a reasonable seizure at that point. And that's why, to a certain extent, perhaps the force and things would make a difference. But
to use your original word, focus, shouldn't the focus be on whether it was reasonable for him to act as he did or more reasonable to get a warrant and serve the warrant at the door when it's opened and to justify doing it at 2:30, 3 o'clock, 3:30 in the morning as opposed to the next day?
By the next day, Your Honor, under the exigent circumstance of this case, Deborah Keith would have never been able to be prosecuted. We would have never gotten the .17 blood alcohol concentration for this eighth-time DUI offender.
It may well be the case that if you waited till the morning, it would be more difficult for an expert to extrapolate back to the time when she had her drink, because she'd have the blood alcohol content of zero, presumably. But who knows, 1.7, how soon that would dissipate. But it doesn't take more than a half an hour to go to a 24-hour JP court in Kent County to get a warrant. I mean, it's like going to an ATM machine getting a warrant in Kent County.
Your Honor, maybe our experiences are a bit different.
Well, just to follow up on that, is it correct that in order for your reasonableness argument to prevail, that there had to be exigent circumstances for the state policeman to do what he did?
To order them out of the home? Yes.
Okay. And we have no determination by the trial judge of whether there were or were not exigent circumstances, correct?
He says, I did not see certain types of exigencies.
We have no determination.
No, we do not.
So if you are correct, then would it not follow that the disposition that you're arguing for is a reversal and a remand for a determination by the trial judge of the exigent circumstances issue?
Yes, Your Honor, that could certainly be one.
One last question. Is Welch versus Wisconsin, the United States Supreme Court case, still good law?
I'm unsure as I stand here, Your Honor, whether or not it is. We did not cite it in this court.
I know, and it surprised me because the facts are on all fours with this case.
Well, I'm looking at the court's opinion on page 12. I just want to make sure we all understand the court's ruling on exigency. The court said, the state has failed to demonstrate that sufficient exigency existed in this situation to justify the non-consensual intrusion into the constitutional sanctity of the home. And prior to that, it said you should get a warrant when you can. So didn't the court specifically say there was no exigent circumstance?
But it makes no determination or makes no discussion as to what exigencies existed here or what exigencies may apply here, Your Honor. In fact, in the briefing, we specifically talked about blood alcohol concentration, et cetera, and the court never discusses it at all.
Okay. Well, that's different in saying the court didn't give its reason for finding no exigent circumstance. And what the fact is, the court heard your argument and says the state, for want of a better term, has failed to demonstrate, meaning failed to convince me, the trier of fact, that there was exigency.
But, and the exigency that he speaks of is the non-consensual intrusion. That is, the stepping over the threshold.
Well, it follows the sentence that says, when it's practical, you ought to get a warrant.
Yes.
I recognize, this is the trial judge speaking, you don't need a warrant if there are exigent circumstances. Then the trial judge says, I don't find them here. Isn't that what the trial judge said?
But what the court says is you need a, he's saying you need a warrant simply to step over that threshold. And again, that's the whole focus problem in this entire case.
No,
is,
he didn't say that. His first sentence says, whenever it's practical, you should get a warrant. And then the second sentence talks about you don't need a warrant if you have exigent circumstances, but here you didn't have exigent circumstances.
But I suppose, Your Honor, and I don't want to parse it too finely, but in this situation, to justify the non-consensual intrusion into the constitutional sanctity of the home, and again, he's focusing only on the stepping over the threshold. He never focuses on the actual, what we've talked about here, and that is the true seizure in the case, and that is, please come out, or command, or whatever.
And we've used up all your time.
Yeah, thank you.
Including your rebuttal time.
I understand.
Good morning, Justices. Kevin Howard here representing Ms. Keith. In some respects, I feel like the coach with a six-point lead and 2 seconds on the clock, and I've got the ball on the 50-yard line, and all I have to do is snap it to the quarterback, and if he falls down, I win the game. And I don't want to be overconfident about this case, but from your questions, it sounds like the court sees the case much the way the defense does, or the appellee in this situation. You know, here Mr. Wallace called the police officer's conduct of entry into a private residence at 2:30 in the morning a minimal intrusion. Just strikes me as an odd reference in this day and age. The home is supposed to be the place where you feel the safest, where there you do have sanctuary, and to suggest that a police officer he didn't have the benefit of experiencing the hearing. I know that he doesn't know the police officer involved in this case, but if he was standing in your doorway, even on a Sunday morning, and he were invited, you'd feel intimidated. And in this particular situation, you suggest that he asked everybody to come outside is extremely far-fetched, and I think that he made it clear in his testimony he uttered a command. I want to turn first to this whole notion of exigency and why I believe the trial judge worded his opinion the way he worded it. Because I think he made a finding that the state didn't offer any evidence of exigent circumstances at the hearing. There wasn't any testimony from the police officers about dissipation of blood alcohol, that they've learned about that in their training at the police academy or from continuing law officer education programs. The state didn't offer the state chemist to testify to the court that this is what we train police officers, that they know that there's a shelf life of the alcohol in content of a person after drinking, and that we have to take action within a certain period of time to preserve evidence. The trial judge got the benefit of none of that.
Well, putting that aside, that's only one exigency. The other, as Mr. Wallace points out, is that if she enters her home and she consumes additional alcohol, and then everyone in the home could say she was upset by fleeing this unidentified person who said they were a police officer, but they were in plain clothes in an unmarked car. she came in the house and had a couple of drinks. If she had additional drinks, then that would skew the whole reading of what her blood alcohol was at the time of the driving. So isn't that an additional exigent concern?
Well, Your Honor, I agree that it would have to be part of the police officer's analysis or investigation, but they didn't talk about that either. There wasn't any testimony about a concern that she might consume alcohol. They just simply presented nothing about their concerns for either the dissipation of alcohol or the increase in blood alcohol in consumption of the home.
Well, what evidence did they present?
Nothing. Nothing about exigency at all. The police officer, when he turned into the driveway, and I trying to read between the lines of the trial judge's opinion, the statements that were disputed about people being outside, you've got a circumstance where somebody has now followed a citizen and her passengers 6 miles down rural roads in Kent County, probably unlit, and maintained a steady distance from their car and followed them all the way to their residence. And they don't know what he's up to. And perhaps they thought he was going to do harm to them. So they're standing outside to figure out what's what. But at some point, they went inside. Now, it's a contested issue. It was contested at the hearing. Ms. Keith testified that as soon as she pulled up, she got out of the car and went inside. Officer Brower said that he saw two or three people in the garage as he turned into the driveway. He couldn't identify anybody from 75 or 100 yards away. Either could the off-duty officer from that distance. So they didn't even know who was outside, whether it was the driver or not. They just simply avoided the hard issues in this case. In my view, even entering that property without a warrant is an intrusion on this homeowner's rights. The police can't just come in your yard whenever they want. And in this circumstance, that police officer, all that he had to do, if he wanted to do this the way we suggest it needs to be done in Kent County, is sit at the end of that driveway, bang out a couple of paragraphs on his laptop, email it to the Justice of the Peace Court, dispatch a trooper at Troop 3, 4 miles from Court 7, 24-hour court, and pick the warrant up. Or, in the alternative, ask that the magistrate email the e-signature warrant back, and they'll pick up the signed warrant later. And I would suggest that process probably would have taken 20 minutes at 2:30 in the morning. 20 minutes. And it's just the pattern of conduct that we've come to in Kent County. This is not a road trooper. This is not a detective that we're dealing with. Corporal Brower, as he testified, is part of a special unit of the police involved in street-level drug interdiction. That's what he does. So they chase people all day long. They're busting down doors all day long. And, I'm here today. This case has bothered me from the moment this lady landed in my office, because there's a pattern in this particular police union of a failure to respect the homeowner's rights and to live in the margins at all times during the course of their work and to not worry about things like obtaining search warrants. I believe this case is a classic example where they had the time and the ability to get that warrant in 20 minutes, and that there was no probability of loss of evidence, even though they didn't discuss it. That's why the trial judge, in his opinion, said that he's not satisfied the state has presented a case for exigency. Because they didn't. They didn't even talk about it. It didn't show up in this case until Mr. Welsh filed, his final memo, and he threw it in the final memo as part of his answer to the judge's sort of supplemental question.
And Mr. Welsh would have been the prosecutor in the trial court?
That's correct, Your Honor. A seasoned prosecutor who's been in this business, I would estimate 25 years he's been prosecuting these cases. They just avoided the subject because there's no credible argument that they could make. And no concern that she was going to flee. And at that point, at the point where Corporal Brower pulled in that driveway, he still didn't even know who the driver was. But so what did he do? instead of getting a warrant to properly carry out his duties, he just used a shotgun approach. I'm going to sort this out, you know, whether it's convenient for the homeowner or not, whether you feel like this intrusion is unreasonable. I'm ordering everybody out, and I'm going to sort this thing out. So he took everybody into custody. And that's just the type of recklessness that permeated this case from the beginning. Starts with Officer Rao. You know, in his police report, he says that the defendant was driving erratically and that a rear seat passenger threw an object at his vehicle. That's in his report. But in his testimony, he didn't see any object being thrown at his car. His passenger reported it to him. Now, here's a guy who's driving his motor vehicle, his own private car, looking right at the defendant's car, and he doesn't see what he claims to be the basis for him stopping in the crossover and ordering her out of her car. He didn't see it. So that's how the case starts. And it gets worse from there. Yeah, I'm up here. I'm afraid I'm going to start repeating myself. The failure to produce any evidence of exigency, you know, is the basis of Judge Young's opinion. He just decided that he's just not going to go on faith. He's got to hear something. And he's not going to make assumptions, or he's not going to take judicial notice of something, some scientific principle. He wants to hear about it. And they just avoided it because they couldn't make a credible argument.
We can summarize your position. It's that, number one, the court found that the state had utterly failed to prove exigent circumstances, and there was good reason for that finding because no evidence was adduced by the state. That left two other options. One would be the consent of the homeowner for the state trooper to enter and order everybody out, or a warrant. And since there was no consent given, then the only other option was a warrant, and since no warrant had been obtained.
Your Honor, any better. That's exactly our position. And this is not a minimal intrusion. Yeah, and the state shouldn't, I'm just surprised to hear that come out of a law enforcement officer's mouth, that this is a minimal intrusion under the circumstances. Because at 2:30 in the morning, at least in my household, you know, we're usually asleep. Somebody's going to start banging on the door at 2:30 in the morning. I'm not going to feel like it's a minimal intrusion. Believe me, whether he's got a badge or a gun or not. Mr. Wallace couched this in terms of reasonableness. Let me couch it in terms of perspective. You know, maybe there's a different perspective where he comes from. But the county I live in, I think my perspective is dead on, and the arguments I've made on behalf of Ms. Keith are dead on, because that's how we live here. And I'm hoping the court will take this opportunity to maybe just remind law enforcement that, you know, when you go to somebody's home and just decide that you are judge, jury, and executioner, you need to reconsider your duty. And you need to reconsider your training and make sure that you get off on the right foot, because this thing started bad and ended worse. And there's simply no excuse for it. And frankly, I heard no credible excuse offered by the state in their argument.
Well, and I'm looking at the court's opinion again, and as you point out, the primary focus started out on consent. And the court concluded that there was no consent. Then the court did address exigent circumstances, although I looked at one part before when I was talking to Mr. Wallace. What the court says on page 11 is, the state has not established any credible degree of urgency in making this arrest, nor that it would have taken unduly long for Corporal Brower to obtain a warrant from a neutral and detached magistrate. So the court, to the extent the state's alternative position was, if there wasn't consent, there was exigency, what the court seems to be saying is you didn't have consent, and while you might have had probable cause, in the absence of an exigent circumstance, you needed to convince a neutral magistrate that you had probable cause. Is that right?
That's exactly what happened, Your Honor. And all fairness to Mr. Wallace, he wasn't at the hearing. And I don't know if that rang true when you read a cold transcript and you don't participate in the actual event. Sometimes you miss those things. But I was there. They couldn't have talked about those issues and kept a straight face. The timing of getting a warrant and concern for loss of evidence or whatever. They couldn't have done it with a straight face under the circumstances. This was, a fresh event. He's arriving at this home 20 minutes after Officer Rouse's first contact with the Keith vehicle. I don't know how he could have kept a straight face. In fact, I doubt very seriously he would have put his hand on the Bible and sworn to tell the truth and then made some suggestion that that was a concern of his. That's all I have.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement and recess.